The field of brain science is expanding, from traditional psychology to the study of neural cells and circuits to computer science and information technology. There are many scientific arrows pointed at and into the brain these days. On a visit to the University of Washington last month, I had a chance to spend some time with scientists from all over the world in all of these disciplines and more, who gathered to share the latest research on what various fields in science have to contribute to our understanding of how the brain works. Some of the most exciting work is being done on very young brains. I sat down with Allison Gopnik, professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley, who argues persuasively that we need to think of young children more like little scientists, not blank slates, if we really want to unlock the keys to learning.
What we've discovered is that even very young children are making hypotheses about the world and testing them against evidence in much the way that scientists do. Now, when scientists test their hypotheses against evidence, we call it experimentation. And when toddlers do it, we call it getting into everything, or sometimes we call it playing around. But what we've discovered is that that process of getting into everything or playing around or watching what's going on around them has the same kind of mathematical structure as what scientists do when they're trying to figure out about the world.
Do you think that learning is a state of the brain, or is it a set of instructions that teachers, if they follow correctly, will produce smart children, smart students?
Well, I think the thing that we say is that babies and young children are already smarter than any other creature on the universe. So what we're really trying to do when we're involved in education is not making children smarter. They're already unbelievably smart. What we're really trying to do is to get them to use the kind of learning abilities that they already have in place, that they've been using through all the years of human evolution. So it seems to me that what we should be doing is to try to exploit the fact that children are really designed to learn in ways that are much more powerful than we would have thought even 30 years ago.
How do you think the educational system gets in the way of that predisposition to learning that you think the brain seems to be kind of hardwired for?
Well, there are certain circumstances in which we absolutely learn a lot from other people, and we can even learn a lot from people explicitly teaching us things. If you think about the origins of, say, formal education, it's a very recent institution, say, the last couple of hundred years. And if you want to teach someone instructions for how to run a factory, for instance, having someone give you very explicit instructions might be a good way to do that. But if what you really want is to have creativity, innovation, those capacities, then the same kinds of techniques that we've been using in the past aren't the best ways of doing that. I think we can look to models of what children are doing spontaneously, and what we see is that preschoolers, for example, are using their everyday play as a way of exploring possibilities. And school-age children are observing what people do and learning by watching the actions of other people and interpreting them and acting themselves. And neither of those are things that we do very much in school.
So you see children playing, and unlike moms who might see it as getting into everything, or you know, poets who might see it as some beautiful, romantic, nostalgic activity that they wish they were actually doing. You see vast amounts of data being absorbed and computed by these little minds. Scientifically, how do you come to that metaphor or conclusion?
Right. So it's a good question. If you actually just talk to a three-year-old, what you'll get is a beautiful stream of consciousness monologue about ponies and horses and birthdays. You won't get anything that sounds like it makes a lot of rational sense. And that led even great psychologists like Piaget to think that babies and young children were intrinsically egocentric and irrational and illogical. The reason, I think, was because we weren't asking them the right questions in their language. So what we've discovered is if you show children a real-life system, let's say a box that lights up and plays music when you put things on it, and now simply ask the children, make this go, then you suddenly see them performing these incredibly sophisticated, powerful computations. If you leave the room and leave them with the box and just watch what they do when they put things on the box, you discover that what they're doing is actually very well designed to solve the particular problem they're trying to solve. So by looking at what they do instead of what they say, they turn out to be much smarter than you would have thought otherwise.
Now that possibly argues for a exclusively Montessori style of school where you just let the kids sort of go and then marshal their behaviors into productive enterprises towards the end of the school day or something like that. I suspect it's more complicated than that.
Well, I think it is more complicated than that. If you look, for one thing, it seems to be different for younger children and older children, as you might expect. So I think there's actually a reason why we see such a strong transition in lots of cultures between what we think of as preschoolers, children under the age of 5, and then, say, children between 5 and 12. And I think there's some reason to believe that there's a kind of evolutionary program where the young ones, the preschoolers, are really very strongly designed to be learning from exploring and exploration. They're certainly learning from other people, but they're learning by having other people comment on what they do, give them information in the right way, and so forth. When you get to school-age children, I think those children are more designed to actually start learning the specific skills that are there in the adult culture. That's what you see when you look in other cultures. And they're learning more through a kind of process of what I think of as a kind of guided apprenticeship, where you get a skill, you try it, you watch someone who's expert, then they comment on what you do. So I think what you'd expect in preschool is quite different from what you'd expect in school. One of the things that I think is very problematic now is the good news about how much young children are learning has led people to want to push schooling back further and further in ways that just are counterproductive when you're talking about 3 and 4 year olds. So I think one issue is that when you're talking about the kind of learning that 0 to 5 year olds are doing, that I think we have good reason to believe that's exploratory creative learning. And we have some models. Montessori is one, the Reggio Emilia program is another. Really good models for the kind of context in which those children will bloom and will learn the most. When you're talking about school-age children, I think there's reason to believe that what they're doing is different. But the funny thing is, we don't teach those children very well either, in the sense that the children have very few opportunities for actually practicing skills or for watching people who are expert practicing skills. And I suspect, for example, that part of the reason why you see so many teenagers and school children who love music and sports and hate school, it's not because music and sports are easy and school is hard. It's not even because music and sports somehow have touchy-feely teachers. No, I mean, the music and teachers and sports coaches are really tough. I think it's because those are contexts in which they really are getting these examples of apprenticeship, which they don't typically get in the classroom in other areas.
Allison Gopnik, professor of psychology at the University of California at Berkeley. I spoke with her last month. Her latest book is The Philosophical Baby, What Children's Minds Tell Us About Truth, Love, and the Meaning of Life.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.